Now, if you put salt in water, does the salt get wet or does the water get salty? We would normally say that it becomes salty water. That even though there may be a huge pile of water, a small amount of salt transforms it and changes its character completely. Now, when we come to talk about the baptism of Jesus in the Jordan, it's kind of something similar. Does Jesus get wet or does the water get Jesus? You know, people sometimes say, well, why did Jesus have to get baptized? Because we think of baptism as cleansing you of sin. And surely Jesus, we say, had no sin. So therefore, why did he have to get baptized? Well, it's actually kind of the opposite. It's that the world that had been imprisoned in sin since the time of the fall now becomes sanctified because of Jesus. And so this is why we now use water in baptism, believing in his power to sanctify and to make holy, because Jesus has made it holy. That this is kind of the beginning of the redemption of the world, where Christ, just by his very presence in our midst, sanctifies and changes the very nature of creation. And so now, and particularly after the resurrection, we now say that the whole world is filled with the glory of God. You know, there's so often in the past, there's been this sort of dualistic theology where people have said, well, the Spirit is good, anything created is bad. And it's a complete heresy, because we're saying that Christ has sanctified creation. It is now filled with the holiness of God. Now, when we come to this feast of the baptism, in a sense, it really begins for us the ministry of Jesus. And this is the point where his mission in the world now opens up. And the readings speak of this. If you're listening there to the first reading from Isaiah, it speaks a lot about justice. It says, see, here is my servant who will bring justice to the nations. If we want to truly understand what is the mission of Jesus, we need to understand what is the true scriptural understanding of justice. In our modern world, we think of this as punishment or payback. You've hurt me, so I need justice, which means you've got to hurt more than I hurt. Now, a lot of people looked at the scriptures this way and simply assumed, well, this means that Jesus has come with a big stick to try and punish us because we've been bad. That is not what the scriptures are saying. The scriptural understanding of justice is right ordering, bringing everything back to its correct order again. Where things have become disordered, bring them back into order. Kind of the same way in the beginning of Genesis, in the creation of the world, it says that originally there was chaos and God's Spirit breathed and brought order. So here in the new creation, once again, Christ is trying to bring order out of the chaos, but here, it's not mountains and rivers that he's creating, but it's human hearts. Our hearts that have become disordered. He's trying to bring them back into line with his will. And he doesn't do this with a big stick. He doesn't do this by threatening us or by punishing us, but he does by correcting the imbalance. And the imbalance was love. Where there was no love, where humanity had turned in on itself, and human relationships had now become a competition to see who could get the most, or who could be the most in control, the most powerful, Christ now comes to reveal a message of love that will heal the disorder. And at the moment of this baptism, it's as though he cuts straight to the heart of the problem. A lot of people speak about this particular line that we find in every account of the baptism of Jesus, where the voice of God the Father comes in and says, "You are my beloved Son. In you I am well pleased." Now we can look at that and think, just a cool little party trick that God's doing here. Yeah, to start off the mission. Voice from heaven, everyone's going to pay attention and realize he must be the Son of God. But it's more than that. If we try and connect the dots of what's going on here. So we've got this injustice. We've got this sin which has come from a lack of love. A sin which is being driven by a real crisis of our identity. That somewhere deep in the core of my identity, I'm fighting for survival. I'm fighting to try and win back what has never been given to me, which is love. And then here, the beginning of the medicine, the redemption, the healing begins with this proclamation of the Father's love. So often, that's the thing which we've never heard. You know, I speak to so many people who say this, that they've never heard their fathers say, "I love you." They've never heard their fathers say, "I delight in you. I'm pleased by you." To be able to hear your father say, "You are my beloved son, in you I'm well pleased." Or, "You're my beloved daughter, I delight in you." So many people I talk to, it's as though they go through life starving, wanting to hear those words. And we've even got now, you know, secular psychologists who are coming in and saying the same thing. That so much of what we call sin, young people running off and getting into dodgy relationships, having premarital sex, people getting caught up in drugs, so much of it is actually craving to hear those words, particularly in terms of relationships. Desperately trying to find someone who's going to say those words to you, "I delight in you." And we'll do anything to find someone just to speak those words. God the Father comes in and says the words that we've never heard. Not only to Jesus, but there's something very significant there. Like, Jesus is God. If anyone on this planet is strong and able to do stuff by himself, it's Jesus. But here's the Father saying, even he needed to hear those words to be able to begin his mission and step out in the world. To have the confidence in his identity to be able to step up and then proclaim. For us as Christians, we cannot step out on mission until our identity has been healed. Otherwise, we're always going to be trying to compensate. We're always going to be trying to find someone to speak those words. And you find this even in Christian ministry. People who would do great things, but they're doing it only so that they can hear those words. "We delight in you because you're fantastic. You're amazingly gifted." For us to really be able to proclaim the love of God, we need to hear the love of God spoken into that place where we're starving, where our hearts are crying out. And so this is where this feast day becomes very personal. For you to hear God the Father speak these words to you. We may never hear our own Father say it. I pray that you will. But sometimes people, I mean, once again, I've spoken to so many people where their fathers have died. They've never had the chance to try and reconcile that relationship or to be able to actually hear their fathers say, "I'm pleased with you." And so they go through life constantly craving until they open the scriptures and allow God to speak the true message. And he does speak this. He speaks this to every single one of us in our baptism. He speaks it to us every day we come to the Mass, trying to reaffirm our baptism, to say, you are my beloved child. So my encouragement to you is this. As we come here into the Eucharist, as we are reminded of our own baptism and the commission placed upon us to go out on mission, to have the strength to stand up and proclaim boldly, let's come here with our ears opened, with our hearts opened, to allow God to speak this word of affirmation. I delight in you. I rejoice over you. You are beautiful. You are my beloved son. You are my beloved daughter. Allow that truth to rebuild us, to strengthen us, to reshape the foundation of our lives that has so often been cracked and crumbling. Let it create a whole new foundation for us to stand on, to build our identity upon, that this is who I am. I am the beloved of God. When we hear that, we'll be able to step out in all boldness and proclaim this to other people.